This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 198, Procreation TED Talk. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the animated series coming to Blu-ray, pre-production photos from the new series, and the StarTrek.com poll that asks which was the best Star Trek romance. Then in the feature, we're joined by Philip Gilfus and Zachary Frueling to discuss the Voyager episode, Someone to Watch Over Me. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. Welcome back to The Ready Room. It's been a little while since you co-hosted after I think you had a long stretch, like kind of like Zachary right now, right? Where you're on all the time.
Yeah, you know, there was a while where I was warming up the cot for him. He has since taken over, and I'm glad he has. He's done a fantastic job. But
I love that we have that cot over in the corner of the Ready Room for the guest who hangs around for a month.
I tell you what, it's really been useful over the years. It really has. Whether it's me or someone else, someone always seems to be occupying that spot. It's very needed. But it's great to be back on the Ready Room with you. It has been a little bit while, and I'm always happy to be discussing Voyager here with you.
Well, of course, it's appropriate. It's a Voyager episode, and you co-host our Voyager show, To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Good. See, I was going to let you yell it, because you're much better at it than me. So.
I know my cue.
So today we are going to talk about Voyager in the feature, as we're joined by Philip Gilfus and Zachary Frueling to talk about Someone to Watch Over Me. But before that, we're going to talk about non-Voyager stuff, and we're going to talk about the animated series first. Now, Char, we finally have an animated series podcast on the network, Saturday Morning Trek, hosted by Aaron Harvey and Darren Moser. Are you enjoying getting your fill of TAS now?
You know what? I truly am. They are doing such a bang-up job with Saturday Morning Trek. I look forward to it every other week, sometimes every week, because occasionally they've given us more than a bi-weekly podcast.
They've had a few special ones.
Yeah, they had the interview with Walter Koenig, which was fantastic. And the one that just came out, as of when we were recording this, they did their review of Yesteryear, which was brilliantly done. And if you haven't listened to it yet, check it out. I really am enjoying it. It's such a fun show. And Aaron puts in so many great sound effects and little trinkets from the 70s. It's very much a product of that time, and it's a little time capsule.
And commercials, too. The actual commercials from the time, yeah.
Yeah. And not all of us have lived through that time, so it could be you're listening to those things and experiencing them for the very first time. It's a part of Trek fandom that is so often forgotten, and I'm really glad that we have somebody to catalog that era of Star Trek, and also just culturally in general.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a really fun show. It takes me back to memories of being a kid myself. And for those who, I'm sure anyone listening here knows about the animated series, that it exists, although you may not have watched it. It aired from September 1973 to October of 1974. So just 1 year. There are technically two seasons, but there are only 22 episodes. The second season only has, I think it's 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah.
Just it's a very short number. I always just lump them all in. It's just one thing, the animated.
It should just be one long season. I agree.
Yeah, It should be, yeah. So our news story today that ties into this is that the animated series is coming to Blu-ray towards the end of this year, around the holiday season. And finally, they're going to do this. I have it on DVD, and I've been wondering if they were going to put it out in high definition, because I think it's already available that way on Netflix and maybe Amazon and other places if you stream it. I believe it is.
Okay. I actually don't know for a fact. I haven't tested it out in a long time.
Yeah, I'm not positive if it's in HD on those services myself, although I believe that it is. But because of the way it was made, you know, they can clean it up and they can put it out there. And it's sort of like when they released Enterprise on Blu-ray first, and people were upset, like, well, why are we getting Enterprise? Why don't we get The Next Generation? Why don't we get DS9 or Voyager? And the answer is, well, Enterprise was done in HD to start with, so they don't have to do anything to it. They just have to put it on Blu-ray discs and package it and maybe do some extras. And in the case of Enterprise, they did wonderful extras.
Yes,
but we don't know yet with TAS if they're going to do extras or not.
It would be wonderful if they did, because listeners of my show, To the Journey, know I am such a junkie for DVD and Blu-ray extras. I want all the behind-the-scenes info. I want all the interviews. I want tons of stuff. That's what really entices me to buy an actual physical disc these days. Not necessarily the feature itself. I want more than that. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who has that methodology. Now, I read somewhere on Twitter, and I'm really sorry, I don't remember who said it, but it was just a while ago who somebody said, somebody asked this person, why are they going for the animated series on Blu-ray? Who cares? And the person replied, well, because it's much easier to clean up the animated series than it would be for Voyager or DS9. And now that I'm thinking of it, it might have been Trekcore, but I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But they're absolutely right. That's why it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, so is there a big audience for this? Probably not. You know, they're not going to sell hundreds of thousands of copies of the animated series on Blu-ray. But when it's easy to put out, there are fans out there who do want this. And it is part of Star Trek history. And why not release it if you can, especially in the anniversary year? And it's the original series cast. It's the 50th anniversary of the original series first airing, so it makes perfect sense to me. I do hope that they do extras, because I think it would be a huge missed opportunity if they don't go sit down once again with people like Dorothy Fontana and really talk about this in depth, find out things that haven't been discussed before in extras, and catalog this stuff before people are gone, because everyone's getting older and there are so many people who worked on this show who are still around. It doesn't always have to be the people at the very, very top either, right? It's other people who are involved who have stories to tell, and I hope they go and they find that and they put it on the discs.
Yeah, you know what? I would buy the discs just for a really good in-depth conversation with DC Fontana alone. And you're absolutely right. We're not going to have all these people with us, let's be honest, for a whole lot longer. They're getting up there, and lest we forget, we've lost some of them already. And so now really is the time. Why not for the 50th? Why not go all out? Why not give it one last really big hurrah?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is fun. I'm definitely going to pick this up when it comes out. And I just hope it has some nice extras on it. I'll pick it up either way. But extras would be great as well.
And see, I'm in the more wait and see camp. If they're just going to do this so that it looks nicer on Netflix, I'm just going to watch it on Netflix. But if there's extras, then you've got my attention.
Well, I like to have everything on the shelf over there, which you can kind of see if you were seeing the video of this. You can see over there
I've
the
seen your shelf. It is
best. Where I have everything lined up.
And it is good, because you never know for sure just how long everything is going to be on your streaming platform of choice. We dealt with that earlier this year, where there was the threat, I guess, of Star Trek leaving Amazon Prime. And fortunately, that's not the case. But if that were to happen and you don't have physical copies of your Trek of choice, well, then what?
Well, that's exactly the thing. And I said this on a recent show, but I tell everyone, the fans get really, really upset about this. But my advice to everyone is, you need to buy Star Trek on physical media. If you love Star Trek, you need to buy it on physical media. I know it's expensive, but if you look around, you will find great deals on it. And you don't have to buy it all at once, but just over time, just collect it. If, you know, like for me, I buy all my books as ebooks. But there are some books that I really love. And for those, I'll actually buy a physical book. Same with music. Mm-hmm. There are a few artists who I really love, and I'll buy anything that they publish on disc because, A, I want to support them by actually buying the physical copy. But also, I just want to have a physical copy of that so that if anything ever happens, I don't lose that material. So
right. I think this goes into a deeper conversation, too, of if you really want Star Trek to persevere and last and continue for years to come, you do have to, unfortunately, shell out a little money because you're voting with your dollars. That's how people out there, you know, the powers that be, whoever they are, know that their work is being supported. So, you know, to everybody who's already screamed, oh, I'm not going to get CBS All Access and watch the new show because it's not on network TV, please think again. Do you want Star Trek or not? Is it worth the price of a latte once a month to get brand new Star Trek, which we've all been screaming for, or not? You vote with your dollars. You vote with your actions. Yeah. Do what you think is right. I'm not going to tell you how to go for it, but I don't know. Maybe I did. But as a Star Trek fan, I think the answer is clear. Support however you can. I know that many people aren't, you know, I certainly am not rich. I don't have tons of money to fling either. But when it comes down to it, I'm going to support in every way that I can.
Yeah, and it's really a very small amount of money we're talking about for All Access.
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of All Access, this is our second news item today. And by the time this show airs, this will not be new news. And in fact, there may be more information about this by the time this Ready Room actually lands on your device to listen to. But as we're recording it today on March 20th, this is a news story. And some photos have surfaced from the set of the new Star Trek series, or at least pre-production. They're starting to get things together. They're starting to prepare green screens. And it looks like they're preparing a set that would be the surface of an alien planet. And we have one character who's wearing an actual spacesuit. So, Char, does this give you any indication as to what you might be expecting, the time period, or anything about this new series?
Yes and no. It says a lot and a little at the same time because we don't know what exactly this is for. My guess is that it's promo shots, something to preview the series. It might not be the actual series itself because this looks sort of like not quite an hour day spacesuit, but maybe something a little bit into the future. It's a little baggy. And it doesn't look too far removed from current spacesuits. So maybe it's just slightly into our future. And I'm just wondering, is this sort of going to have that strange new worlds and exploration feel just to entice us? Is that what they're going for? It might not actually be real footage that they're going to use in the series itself at this point because it's so early. But that's just my thought. What do you think?
Well, I think the spacesuit reminds me a bit of the spacesuits from the original series. So it makes me feel, and also what they're setting up here and the surface of this planet, it reminds me a lot of the original series. So it makes me feel like maybe they're going to take us back to the TOS look and feel. Obviously, with the big green screen, they could drop any kind of planetary background environment that they wanted in here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I hadn't really thought about it just being a promo shot until you mentioned that. But I think that you could really be onto something here because it almost looks like an oversized photo studio, like in the shopping mall, or you go to Sears or somewhere and you're going to get your photo taken. They can like pull the background out behind you. Like this is going to be the beach and you can have like the sand buckets and you can pose like you're playing on the beach or something.
Wow. You know, that makes me really wonder about the quality of this new series. Are they shooting this at a big, overblown
Sears
portrait
studio
in Burbank? Really? They can't do better than that?
They've got a deal with Sears. They're going to shoot the whole thing in the photo studio.
Oh my gosh. All the crying children. Yeah. Ugh.
You can buy the episodes that you want. You'll get to see all the episodes. You can choose five that you like, and they'll be sent to you in a package.
You can costume change up to three times for yes. a certain price package.
That's right.
You get 4 8x10s and.
But you know, I think you could be right here that maybe this is something they're setting up in order to do some photo shoots for initial promo material, as opposed to this being the actual set that they would be shooting an episode on.
I don't know. I say that just because it is still very early in the process, and I feel, at least from our perspective of things, they're just starting to get things together, like who is going to be on the writing staff, like Nick Meyer, and we just found out about Brian Fuller, and so they're probably conceiving of what the show is really about right now.
Yeah.
And they're going to shoot, I would guess, in the fall, so that they can debut in January. If that is, in fact, the timeline. Honestly, we don't know. Not for sure.
The press material that has been coming out has often said in early 2017.
Right. So that's not necessarily January anymore.
Yeah. It originally said January 2017, and then they changed the wording to be early 2017. But Les Moonves himself, in recent interviews, he has continued to say January 2017.
So it may or it may not. We just have to see. May or may not.
I think it's really pushing it. I think maybe it'll be like the Apple approach, where when Apple says something is coming out in a certain quarter, they mean like the last day of that quarter. So maybe it's going to be like January 31st and they'll say, well, we got it in.
Right. But and maybe that will be the case. And if it is, so be it. Honestly, I just want them to do a show well. I want them to do it right. I want them to take all the time that they need to do it right.
Yeah. I'm fine. I mean, if it's March, I don't care. I mean, I want them to just do a good job at the show, like you said. So that's fine. But these photos are interesting. I don't think they necessarily tell us anything at all about what the series is going to be about.
No,
but
not at all.
It's cool to see something.
It's like it's sand on the ground.
Is that an expression or do you mean literally?
Literally.
It's like
it
sand on the
ground. Alongside a green screen and a dude in a spacesuit. That is all we've got.
That's right.
In the Sears Portrait Studio.
In the Sears Portrait Studio. Exactly.
So that's what we've got, guys.
But it's exciting just to see that there's something tangible about the series that's starting to take shape out there. So
I mean, clearly, cool. they are working on it. It is going to happen.
So we'll see what's going to happen with this. Okay, let's go to the last thing we're going to talk about in news before we get into the feature. And this is something we like to do in the Ready Room. We talk about the polls that StarTrek.com does.
Yay!
And because we're talking about Someone to Watch Over Me today, we thought it would be appropriate to talk about a recent poll, which was actually done back in February on Valentine's Day. What was your favorite Trek romance? So, Char, do you want to give us the rundown of who got the most votes here?
Yeah, okay, let's take a look at this. Chakotay and Janeway. I'm so glad they put them in the poll, but I'm really disappointed with the result because they only got 7% of the vote, and everybody knows that I'm a Chakotay and Janeway shipper. That should have at least been triple the number, if not quadruple. I'm just saying. Next up, we have Geordi and Leah Brahms. They got 2% of the vote, rightfully so. Kirk and Edith Keeler ended up with 9% of the vote, which is a shocker if you ask me. This is really disappointing here. Chakotay and Janeway only got 1% over O'Brien and Keiko. And we know what a popular couple they are. So,
well, they're not popular, but as I always say, they are the most real relationship in Star Trek.
They really are. They really are. It's just, yeah.
Miles and Keiko, that's like an actual real marriage.
Maybe it's too real. That's why people don't like it.
Well, yeah, maybe so.
So after that, we have Odo and Kira with 9% of the vote. Paris and B'Elanna Torres got 15%. Picard and Vash get a measly 5%. And then we get to the meat of the poll here. We have Riker and Deanna Troi with 23% of the vote, only to be topped by Worf and Jadzia, who got 25% and therefore won the poll.
Right.
Now, I know you're a Niner. Would you have voted for Worf and Jadzia?
Yeah, probably. I think I look at it from what's the best relationship and the best romance in terms of it being real, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I think Worf and Jadzia, they had a very natural love and romance, and it felt like a very real relationship. And they, you know, they were the two people that get together that pull the best part out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily work in relationships with other people, but together they were just perfect for each other. So I would agree with this, and I would put Worf and Jadzia over Riker and Troy myself. Now, I can see why Riker and Troy would be the favorite of probably a majority of fans who are listening to this, obviously not a majority, who voted in this poll, because if you're just thinking of it as like favorite relationship in Star Trek, these are the two characters that really stand out, because The Next Generation being really the most popular show, it's the show with the largest fan base.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense that they have such high numbers. And of course, they do end up getting married in Nemesis when they finally decide they're no longer going to be swingers and do the whole thing where they get into different relationships and test out the waters. They get tired of that and decide to commit, finally. So,
well,
more power to them.
And they have the rings in the briar patch around the Baku homeworld to thank for that.
That's right. That's right.
That's
and
right.
Troy's boobs firmed up, so that couldn't have hurt.
And Riker shaved his beard.
And that also couldn't have hurt.
So of the other ones on here, the two that stand out to me as being really good relationships that should have gotten more of the vote are Tom and B'Elanna.
I have to agree. A very realistic couple here.
Tom and B'Elanna, I think, are my favorite. Okay, so here's the thing. I said that I agree with Worf and Jadzia being at the top of the poll. I would agree that that's probably where I would put them if I'm ranking them in a neutral way. Personally, I think Tom and B'Elanna might be my favorite.
Yeah, because again, they have a very realistic romance. It's not all flowers and puppies and kittens and unicorns and rainbows and happy, happy, joy, joy. They have problems. They have to deal with things. They have to overcome hang-ups. But they have good times, too. They definitely do. And that's what I feel like a real, actual, successful relationship really is that you get together with somebody who helps make you better and you're better as a team.
Yeah,
and that's what
exactly.
They are. That's Tom and B'Elanna.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because I have a Voyager bias, for real.
No, I agree with you on that. And the other one is Odo and Kira, because I think that was a really great relationship, that they really helped each other grow a lot as people.
I have to agree. They were solid. Forgive the pun.
Yes, except for when they were in the bucket.
Right. In which case, anything goes.
Yes. But, you know, just as with Worf and Jadzia, Odo and Kira have a tragic ending, in a sense, to their relationship as well, which is appropriate for Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, indeed.
There's some odd ones on here. Like, okay, this is me. I don't think you can put Chakotay and Janeway on here because there is no romance between Janeway and Chakotay. Now, we always joke here on the Ready Room about Kathy and Coco, and about the fact that they're really in love with each other.
Right.
And I do think that in reality for them, there probably is something there. But as far as on the show, there's no romance between them save that quick moment on New Earth and Resolutions. So
Allegedly. Now,
allegedly.
Tristan and I have come up with this sort of conspiracy theory onto the journey where Chakotay and Janeway secretly got married and didn't tell anybody.
Okay, that's possible.
So that's much how we interpret the show anymore. That's in our head canon and it's not going away. Sorry to those of you who don't like it, but that is the way it is for us. So in my mind, they are totally married and they are romancing, for sure. Otherwise, how do you explain away those candlelit dinners?
That's true. There's one problem, though, with your theory.
What's that?
If they got married secretly and didn't tell anybody, Seven still knows about it and it's in her journals.
Oh, that's true. And that creates a lot of problems given what we're going to talk about in the future.
Yes.
Or in the future.
Yes, which is going to take place in the future.
Yes. And it's scrambling my brain.
It is.
Apparently.
Okay, so this was an interesting poll. I mean, they're kind of reaching for multiple choices here by having Kirk and Edith Keeler, Picard and Vosh.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if they're going to go for Kirk, they'd just do like a straight Kirk poll. Kirk and Edith Keeler, Kirk and the Orion slave girl, Kirk and this alien of the week, Kirk and the other alien of the week, Kirk and that other alien of the week.
Well, don't forget about Kirk and Lady Gaga from the Gamesters
of Kirk and Lady Gaga. And she honestly might have gotten my vote. I don't know.
All right. I mean, they could have put Riker and Minuet on here. There's so many things they could have done. So what's odd is that they have so many choices on this one. And then they do other polls where they leave out two or three really critical options that you really need in order to vote properly on the poll. And they'll only give you like five choices.
Yeah.
So here they have so many and some of them are unnecessary.
I guess it just depends on which StarTrek.com intern is working that day.
I guess. I always thought it was a limitation of the system, but apparently not, because there are a lot of options here. Okay, so quick final rundown, one more time, in order from least to most. 2% Geordi and Leia Brahms, 5% Picard and Vosh, 6% Miles and Keiko, 7% Kathy and Coco, 9% Kirk and Edith Keeler. So Kirk and Edith Keeler got more votes than Kathy and Coco.
That makes me so sad.
Yeah, I know. Tied with them are Odo and Kira with 9%. Then we have Tom and B'Elanna with 15%. Riker and Troy with 23%. And Worf and Jadzia with 25% of the vote. So there we go. All right, Char. Well, that's everything we have in news. So before we get into news, though, I would like to remind everyone that The Ready Room is just one of many shows that we have here on the network. We talk about every corner of the Star Trek universe, and so here's a quick look at some of those other things.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You've heard Chief Tripp sign on. I'm serious, Ken. Actually, out of the chair, please.
Okay. God,
I guess the Commodore has the con.
Earl Grey.
Did you really write down Groppler Zorn on this list?
I was just kidding.
This is before he achieved Groppler rank.
He was only a Soplar. He wasn't a Groppler.
What fruit did he like before he got to apples?
The orb.
I want to hear Worf give a command sometime, like 1/4 ramming speed. And then someone says, Captain, regulation specifically states that we cannot go at 1/4 ramming speed while we are in orbit of a planet.
The Ready Room.
To what extent is this episode, the writers and producers of Deep Space Nine turning the mirror back at the fans? You know, I mean, I think all of us Star Trek fans at one point or another probably retreat into this universe we love, Star Trek, that is, it's a fictional world.
What are you talking about, Zachary? Are you suggesting that, like, fans might decide to buy microphones and, like, talk about it like it's real for hours on end?
To the journey!
Next one in line is Spirit Folk, and we already agreed that that is just not necessary for anybody, and let's not torture them with it. Good, let's move on.
The characters in the Fairhaven Hollow program begin to suspect the Voyager crew after they witness several supernatural occurrences.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Tokyo Drift really is the perfect subtitle. Like, you could literally put Tokyo Drift onto the end of any movie, and it would instantaneously become a movie that you would have to see. Citizen Kane, Tokyo Drift.
The 602 Club.
I hate it when shows that are grounded in reality, but obviously they're not, and they have their characters go through socially important experiences.
Literary Treks.
It is very much every one of the characters, you know, who finds themselves sort of pulled into the conflict that's the heart of this story. They are reacting to a fear of the other.
Meta Treks.
I'd love to answer your question, but I can't get the visual image out of my mind of B. Arthur and Betty White in Starfleet miniskirts and go-go boots.
I can totally picture the Golden Girls as Klingons.
Melodic Treks.
What I decided to do was not only would I pick a 6 degree of separation,
not only would I do it musically, but I was only going to do movies that were composed by people who had composed for Star Trek.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon. And he's like, Vulcan has no moon. I'm not surprised.
That is an uncanny Uhura.
Continuing mission.
Yeah, and of course, another great thing is when it's all finished and you look at it and go, yeah, we made that together. Yeah, that's one of the greatest moments. And people respond to it and say, oh, that's pretty well made. The effects are great. The actors are great, even though they're Dutch trying to speak English, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You're going to find these everywhere you get your podcasts, in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, BlackBerry. Go to the website, stream from the show pages, download the MP3 files or grab the RSS link, or get the Trek FM Complete Master Feed. That contains every episode of every show that we do. It's a great way to sample the wide range of content that we have here on the network. All right, Char, let's bring in Philip and Zachary and talk about Voyager.
Let's do it.
When Seven of Nine develops an interest in humanoid mating habits, she turns Voyager into a nature reserve and begins observing the locals. This rubs more than a few people the wrong way, and the Doctor decides to help her find a more acceptable and structured method of learning the ways of love. When she enrolls in the Doctor's course on romance, hilarity ensues, as do romantic feelings towards Seven on the part of the Doctor himself. Oh, and all of this happens whilst Neelix tries to keep Cadi Ambassador Toman from turning the ship into a frat party. And today we're going to talk about this episode from Voyager, Someone to Watch Over Me. And to help us do that, we're welcoming back for the first time in quite a while one of the three cohorts from our TNG show, Earl Grey, Philip Gilfus. Philip, welcome back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back here in the Ready Room, Chris. It's been a while. Isn't this like the bridge? Oh, no, sorry, I'm not used to the palatial Ready Room. You know,
yeah,
we just,
this is the big one. Yeah.
We just have room for our fish, not like an elephant. But no, this is nice to be back here in the Voyager Ready Room. I could get used to this.
Right. Yeah, Janeway's Ready Room is like a hotel lobby, right?
Yes, and then after the lobby, it's the after party, and well, never mind.
Just hang out on the sofas that are scattered all around, yeah.
Yes.
Pass out after you've had too much to eat or drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Riker's especially always. If your body doesn't produce the enzymes necessary to break down synthahol.
But at least she keeps the black coffee on hand.
A little pungent.
Darn right.
Yeah.
She's got you covered.
And speaking of keeping the black coffee on hand, it's always freshly brewed here in the Ready Room because Zachary Frühling never leaves. He's got his own little bed over in the corner now. He just hangs out here every time. Once again, Zachary, welcome back to an episode of the Ready Room.
Thank you. It feels like I never left. But Chris, before we begin, I have something I've been meaning to tell you. I just want you to know you are my sunshine.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Just so you know. Suck up to the host.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure how to respond to that, but
I didn't send any flowers. I hope you forget.
You know what, Char? I have a wager that Zachary won't show up next week.
I'm not going to bet against that.
I took it too far. Yep, yep.
So what happens here? If Zachary shows up next week and does not create a diplomatic incident, then Philip has to host the Ready Room for a month.
Okay, but if he doesn't, then you keep having to do it, Chris.
Oh, okay. So Char gets off no matter what happens here.
Yeah,
no repercussion for Char in this wager. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's typical Char.
I thought we were going to make a bet about Char.
Ooh, you're gonna make this personal.
I don't know. Char, can you put your hair down for a moment?
You give, just give it a shake, yeah.
Wait, how do you mean? What should I do here?
Here, well, I do have some, I'm emailing you some dress suggestions. Let's see if you can put any of those on by the end of the show.
No. Definitely no.
I was going to say that we can go back to the old days of the Ready Room. We can get a bottle of vodka. And Char, if you can drink that and make it through the show without getting as drunk as Ambassador Tolman, then Zachary will host a month of the Ready Room.
Oh, well, that's a sure win because I can process alcohol. My liver is well trained.
Yeah, she has lots of enzymes. Right. Char is 95% enzymes.
That's right. I got this. Zachary, you are screwed.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, 3/4 the width of the show, she'll be like, I co-host TTJ. Do you know who I am?
With the ISS, thank you very much.
All right. Well, let's jump into this episode here. My intro today was sort of a mini synopsis. The other things that you need to know about this episode, if you haven't seen it in a while, is that Seven really offends B'Elanna as she observes the dating of Tom and B'Elanna, and also makes comments about how everyone on Deck 12, Section 9, knows when they are having intimate relations. This sets into motion the episode, and the way that the Doctor teaches Seven, which is very interesting that the Doctor himself is teaching, you've got a hologram teaching a Borg how to have a relationship with humans, which is very interesting. And then we have the whole storyline about the Kadi, who they're making a trade agreement with, which is really odd to me that Voyager is supposed to be making a beeline for Earth through the Delta Quadrant, right? But yet they're taking the time to negotiate trade agreements with locals.
Maybe they need supplies.
Yeah, but how long are they going to be in Kadi space?
Who knows? It could be semi-vast. Never mind the fact that we never hear from them again.
Right. Char, you saw two of the Kadi in this episode. Do they look like they have power over a vast portion of the Delta Quadrant?
No, you're absolutely right. They're complete wuss aliens, aren't they? Yes. With hoods on their heads, and they try to be very prim and proper, but if you let them loose for just 1 second, they're inebriated and overfed. Although, you know what? I think it's a great idea to establish common ground. I do think it's a very important basis of a cultural exchange to share different types of foods.
Sure.
Which is either going to turn out really well, or it's going to end horribly. And I think we saw a little bit of both.
I was a little scared when I heard cheese mentioned at the beginning of this episode, because I was like, oh, whoa, this isn't this one, is it?
What happened last time?
I know what happened last time.
Oh, no, not again.
Somebody give the neural gel packs an injection.
I think Neelix learned his lesson, thankfully.
But in some ways, this is what really... why I like, I mean, this, it's the B plot, but it's why I really do like Voyager. It is that promise that we're going to have these first contact, you know, situations and new aliens, and you know, supposed to be that whole, you know, raison d'etre of Voyager, supposed to be that TOS and slight TNG capturing of meeting new aliens, you know, and so that's why I kind of like, oh, first contact, you know, you get the whole dress up and didn't they all look smart and cool in those formal uniforms? I was just, maybe it's just the TNG in me because they're TNG
they're hot.
Uniforms.
They
but
really
I was like,
are.
Everyone looks
yeah.
so like Janeway. I'm like, I want that action figure of Janeway in her dress uniform.
Totally.
With all four pips, though. Yeah. What did you guys think of the B plot, though? I mean, I love the B plot in this one. You know, most of the time the B plots are a little expendable, but I found this one particularly fun and interesting.
Oh, I thought it was great. I mean, poor Neelix here. He is basically babysitting this guy who's just so ready to cut loose and go crazy, which he does. Which is sort of his fault, and yet it's, I don't know, can you blame the guy that he can't digest synthahol properly? You know, I feel like blaming him entirely is like blaming Neelix for letting this guy get out of control, because the guy was more than willing to do all of this, and Neelix was trying to rein him in, trying, but he was not going to have any of it. I don't know. That's how I saw this. What did you guys think about that? I mean, do you blame Neelix?
I don't know, Char. I don't know if I could say Neelix was really trying. As soon as the guy mentioned that he wanted food, Neelix was more than happy to take him to the mess hall and start cooking for him.
Well, that's like his safety
sure.
word.
Neelix is the cook. That's his specialty. That's something he can relate to. He can handle this.
Right, I know. But I think if you're going to leave him in charge, if he knows that Janeway has entrusted him with something as important as making sure that the guest is taken care of and the trade agreement is worked out, I think Neelix has to step it up a little bit and resist the urge to cook and make sure that he doesn't let the guest get into any trouble that he knows Janeway would not approve of.
Well, that is no fun.
Sure, it wouldn't be a very fun episode, but...
No, that would be a horrible B-plot. All goes as planned and he eats nothing except the bland cheese. The end. We can't do that. No, I thought it was great. It was entertaining.
Have you ever seen Neelix look so scared? Scared.
Right.
He's downright scared of Captain Janeway.
Right. There's that great line where he asks Chakotay, what should I do? And Chakotay says, pray.
Pray.
Which,
pray.
I mean,
come on, that's great.
You're only the first officer. It's like, a diplomatic mission. Those are clearly Neelix. Okay, you need some command guidance. What do I look like? I do work around here.
Yeah.
Unless I'm here to, like, tease the captain, and I don't really have much of a job here.
Yeah, I'm doing nothing.
Neelix looks so proud at the beginning of the episode to be called an ambassador, though. You know, he's beaming when Janeway calls him an ambassador.
Yeah. No, he does let things get a little bit out of control, but yeah. I think he gets in over his head, too. I mean, this guy is more than willing to sample anything and everything that's in Neelix's kitchen, right? And Neelix wants to be a generous host, only this dude is taking it way too freaking far.
And, of course, we have to mention the guest star is Scott Thompson of Kids in the Hall fame. And so it was just awesome to see, you know, this is sort of like, you know, sort of message in the bottle kind of, you know, comedy guest star here. But to have Scott Thompson here, you're like, okay, this is going to be good.
Before we get too far into talking about him, because we're going to talk about him more later on, let's go on with our initial thoughts and the setup of the episode. And so, Char, the setup of the episode I wanted you to talk about initially is B'Elanna, who's ready to create a medical emergency when she notices that Seven is observing them, because Seven's observation of Tom and B'Elanna has been going on before we ever get into the episode. It's been going on for a while on the ship, and now they've figured out what Seven's doing, and B'Elanna obviously isn't very happy about it.
Well, do you blame her? Because what did Janeway say? Like, Seven has gathered something like 30,000 gigaquads of data on relationships.
I was wondering, like, what is she collecting exactly? Now, 30,000 gigaquads must be massive. Is she shooting, like, does she have cameras hidden in their quarters and she's, like, shooting 8K video of their intimate relations? What's going on here? How do you build up that much data? Text doesn't take that much memory.
She's hosting a weekly podcast on the Paris Torres relationship. You know, she does the character profile of Paris the first week and then Torres the next week. And then the third week is, you know, every dimension and the ins and outs of the Paris Torres relationship. And she's built a whole network really around the fact that these two and their relationship. So there's basically no nuance too small.
Yeah, she's done interviews with everyone else on Deck Nine.
Yeah, right. Well, we have to consider that even audio files don't take up that much data. So she's clearly got video as well, which makes me think, and this is a horrible thought, Seven has an immense porn collection.
Yeah. She
on sexual behavior, because that's the only way she's got that much data on this. She's
running Space Gawkers. You know, she's posting the illicit Deck Nine video.
I mean, I'm not judging, but wow, that is an enviable collection.
But seriously, okay, so we're joking here, but I really, that was my very first thought when Janeway says 30,000 gigaquads. I'm like, what on earth is she collecting that takes up so much memory?
I also love how Janeway is in no way mad at all about her people being stalked. It was like, oh, you Seven...
That's cute. It's not a nature reserve, but, you know, I get it. I mean, I sometimes want to stalk people on the ship myself.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, look, we've all
I know
writing...
Chakotay's routine.
Yeah, she shares a wall with him. That's all she needs to know.
She's got a pocket full of Isolin ear chips. She's just carrying them around, you know.
We've all been shipping Tom and B'Elanna. It's fine, Seven. We've all written fanfics, had holo novels about it. It's but still, you know, time and place.
Yeah, okay, all that aside, I love me some feisty B'Elanna. It's really good to know that even though she has her relationship with Tom and that's maybe mellowed her a little bit, she's not afraid to whip out that can of whoop-ass when she deems it necessary.
But, I mean, to me, that is one of the more subtle and sometimes uneven, but relationships is the B'Elanna-Seven relationships. Because it seems to me, you know, the stereotype is of, oh, B'Elanna just, you know, smacks Seven around. But usually, not in this case, every time it's like Torres will attack her and then be like, oh, what am I doing? You're just like me. But they sort of like do that every like 10 episodes where Torres yells at Seven and like, oh, no, you're just like me when I first came aboard.
Well, I think in this instance, she has a reason to be a little bit angry. I mean, clearly, Seven has a lot of information about her sex life. And if somebody was doing that to you and your partner, significant other, what have you, how would you feel about it? It'd probably be a very uncomfortable feeling.
Well, it's not even just that. It's just the fact that there's somebody else who's documenting your daily life.
Well, guys, right? It's right
just
there.
Any aspect of your daily life.
It's right there in the episode title. Someone to watch over me. I mean, that's literally telling you it from the beginning. That is Seven's job on the Voyager.
It's an even more clever title than I initially thought.
The thing I don't understand is Seven seems awfully eager to gather this data, though. Usually Seven's really resisting the humanitarian lessons, the social skills lessons, but this time she's really eager to go out and gather this data.
Well, this episode is interesting in that we really do see how much she's still Borg. Like, she looks human, she's been with them for a while, but she views the world very much as a Borg still. And collecting all this information is perfectly natural for her. That's exactly what she would do as Borg, is to assimilate as much information about another species as she can. So I don't think there's anything at all unusual from her perspective. And I don't think she has any ill intentions or anything creepy or anything like that about doing it.
Oh, no, no,
for
no.
For her, it's just perfectly natural.
The Borg always do their homework.
The other crew members uncomfortable.
Right. Also, we have to consider that Seven is essentially emotionally probably that of a teenager.
Yeah.
Because she hasn't been a human that long. And that is why I found it interesting when the doctor said most people have had their first date before your before your current age.
Well, he says most people start dating, a little earlier than
emotionally, she's in the prime target area to start this whole process. So it seems only natural that she's curious and she's learning a lot. And this is probably, stop me if I'm wrong, kind of what a 13-year-old would be doing. You have to absorb and learn to try and decide how you're going to go about this for yourself.
Yes, strange things are happening to her body. Nanoprobes are coming out at awkward moments. Her implants are just acting odd. Look, it's just standard. She's going to start asking questions.
Well, when the date with Chapman doesn't go well, she really looks like she got her first taste of rejection. I can't tell if she's disappointed with herself because it didn't go well, you know, because she wants to be better at it, or if, she feels rejected in some way.
Yeah.
In a junior high kind of way.
I know. I'm like picturing my sixth grade dance, like the first dance. Of course, you know, I suppose the guy experience might be a little different, but like sweating like profusely, you know, with the first awkward like back and forth as only middle schoolers can do on the dance floor.
Yeah, right. Well, now back and forth like that, that's lesson 19, Philip. So you get to learn that before you learn the more advanced.
Well, I meant the
dance.
Vertical one, so, you know.
Now this would have been perfect. Here's an idea. Instead of Sandrine's, if the doctor had created a holodeck program that was like a middle school gymnasium with the streamers up, you have parental chaperones roaming around the basketball court. That would have been
be
more
so
appropriate.
Awesome.
Okay, let's go on to a different topic here so that we can really talk about each of these in more depth instead of us throwing it all in to the initial thought. So let's move on to the doctor's lessons in love and start at that point where the doctor has decided that he's going to help Seven learn about relationships. And he gives this wonderful presentation. And Char, on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
We were talking about his PowerPoint presentation, which, by the way, Geordi and Data have nothing on the doctor because all they ever had was that little screen in the observation lounge. He's got like the big movie theater screen to work with there.
IMAX.
He does.
Stellar cartography. So
the TED Talk.
But the images that he uses.
Procreation TED Talk.
This is so funny. And I think, Char, because you and I are both designers, we both went here first. We both wrote down space Shutterstock.
We did.
In our notes. But what I also noticed was that it was almost like in the 24th century, there's space Shutterstock that's filled with happy, smiley Starfleet officers posing awkwardly in everyday situations around the ship.
Right?
Oops, I dropped my pad.
And why did they make these? Is it, you know, what are these Shutterstock images for? Are they for some sort of training stuff at Starfleet Academy?
I guess so. Yeah, all the manuals that are just filled.
Right.
Also, the Starfleet websites have lots of smiley, happy people on them that have no real connection to anything that's being...
Come see our diversity at Starfleet Academy.
And, of course, PowerPoints, because it is alive and well in the 24th century, for sure.
Next pad, exactly. Please.
The biggest question I had, though, about the presentation is, where did they get the photo of species 8472 making out?
Now, this is where I think Voyager is actually contributing to the pool of imagery, because it only could have come from them.
So they're like a provider for Space Shutterstock, the crew of Voyager.
They're taking photos for Space Shutterstock
and they're
and getting
uploading
a commission.
Them, getting commission.
Yeah.
But they get paid in replicator rations.
Right. Yes, that's how they've managed by this season to not have to worry so much about supplies.
I was thinking they got that photo in that episode. Shar, you have to help me remember the episode title. That episode when Species 8472 is recreating Starfleet
in the flesh.
In the flesh, yeah.
In
Thank
the
flesh. Yeah. Yeah. That must be the episode where that came from.
I guess so. So
must
those
be.
Were like
well,
two...
Well, you have the one member of Species 8472 is hot for Chakotay, right?
So. That's right.
Oh, yeah. So those were like two cadets on the ground, and Boothby was gone, and they took a picture, and then they ran it through a filter in Photoshop, and it actually revealed the true identity of the two, which was Species 8472. Yeah,
one of them carved the initials of the other in one of the trees. It was
so cute.
I picture 8472 carved in a tree now.
It's like 8-4 part 7-2.
8472 plus one.
Plus one. Oh. No, that's you and me make 8473.
Oh.
What's 8472 times two? Can you do that in our heads?
Wait, is that part of their trade negotiations that Voyager sells their stock photos to other species?
I think so. Maybe that's what they're trade. Oh, so what happened? You know, they went to that planet where they had to trade the stories for some technology. Yeah. There was another planet where it was a planet of graphic designers.
Is this
and
the
they
office
traded
planet?
All the stock images that they had gathered from around the Delta Quadrant. Wow.
I was thinking Janeway was about to trade 30,000 gigaquads of Seven's data.
You think that would be more marketable considering the material, just saying.
Yeah, it's like that point where they're like exchanging stories and they're like, so Captain, I see your literature here is very well. Do you have anything a little more risque? And she's like, well, in my back pocket here.
I've got one of Seven's isolinear chips. Yeah, here, have one.
No,
of
she, right, opened, yeah. She opens up her formal dress uniform jacket.
Yeah.
Just has all the isolinear chips.
Right inside, there are all these isolinear chips lined up. So what's your fancy today, Ambassador?
This is what Janeway was doing when she was away on the planet. It's all those missing scenes. We didn't get them, and it's such a dirty shame because this was a great story.
Do you think that Seven actually captured any data on Janeway and Chakotay?
No, because Janeway would have been a little bit more piqued, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Though, well, I have to say, Shar, when Janeway was away on the planet, I'm not so sure, because while I think that Toman would have been completely into this stuff, Abbott, he's a little too prudish. I mean, after all, Janeway was on the planet with Mr. Pitt from Seinfeld, and the way that he talks, even when he talks to Toman, it's exactly like he's telling, it's like Mr. Pitt telling Elaine, well, I hope you didn't partake of any of those unsavory things while I was away.
But then he says a little bit later, like, you know, it's okay to indulge once in a little great while.
Yeah. As long as you don't make a habit.
So he's open to it. I mean, you'd have to kind of go slowly with him and start off soft. He's not going to be into the hardcore stuff.
But don't you think Mr. Pitt had that secret side to him as well? Like when Elaine wasn't at the office?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I agree. So, I think he's got that side to him. It's just you got to bring out the kink. It's not just going to come out naturally.
There's our show title.
Well, there's the old Delta Quadrant saying, and we've heard it many times, what happens in Voyager stays in Voyager.
Yes.
Or does it?
Well, it doesn't, because Seven records it all and then they distribute it.
And broadcasts it.
Because, you know, Space Shutterstock, they also have videos now as well.
Right, yeah, available on Space Shutterstock, Space Pay-Per-View, or on Isolinear Chip.
So now I'm picturing kind of a rewrite of this episode where the other guy stays on the ship and Seven goes on her first date with him. And, oh, you know, something weird unfolds. Who knows how that would go? But
he's exploring all sorts of things, isn't he?
That would be interesting. Okay, so back to the doctor's presentation here.
Chris, you're trying so hard to rein us back in. I love it.
I tell you, these Voyager-ready rooms, they are the hardest ones.
He is the Neelix of our trio of Scott Thompsons. I'm just kind of have another drink while you're talking,
Chris. If I were the Neelix here, I would say, oh, you guys want to talk about this? Sure, why not? Let's go ahead and talk all about Janeway's illicit trading in kinky videos. But so, Philip, before we got down that rat hole, you were imitating the other wonderful part of the presentation where the doctor starts explaining the miracle of conception to Seven.
Right. And I'm quite familiar with that biological process.
what was this thing he was doing in front of the screen? This little dance. hilarious.
It's just, you know, when he's obviously a holophotographer fanatic and a biologist. You know, I'm just thinking, I would have loved him for my freshman biology course if he was my professor. That would have been so much more interesting.
You know, I would get up at 8 a.m. for that class.
Yes.
Totally.
And you know, he just nerds out just like we do. You know, he's talking about the sociological and the psychological, which, you know, he's interested in. But once you talk about biology, he is in it to win it. And so...
Do you suppose he shot some of those Shutterstock images himself? I'm willing to bet he did.
Now, here's a question. Where are those slides from? Now, is that from Seven's Paris Valana collection as well, or?
You know, the thing is with Space Shutterstock, you're not paying much attention to the username who contributed it.
I want to know what strange situation unfolded where the doctor had to get a holo photograph of Fortress Ovum.
Right.
Well, he must have gotten this somehow, some way.
I also feel
because only he could come up with a title like that. And so, inspired by the image he took, he came up with it.
I actually think that's also a new app I saw developed, Fortress Ovum. It's really addictive, guys.
Is that a platformer?
Yes.
Side-scrolling platformer.
If that doesn't exist, we have to make that as a game, get it out there in the App Store.
Nice.
And you're actually playing against...
Any more ideas.
You're actually playing against 4 million other users, so... You're both going, so.
Okay, speaking of giving people ideas of things to create, here's a question, Char, because you're the main person who is managing our Redbubble store.
Yes.
If Aaron does a Fortress Ovum t-shirt, will we be able to put it in our store, or will Redbubble reject it, or will we have to mark it as mature content? Because they do have that setting, actually.
It depends on how detailed he is.
Okay.
I can actually picture it now. Like, it has, like you said, side scroller, and it has like the 8-bit, and has like the points on top.
Yeah,
pre-orders have already started.
Okay, so talking about the presentation here, Zachary, why don't you jump in here real quick and tell me what you think about the doctor's overall plan, his lessons in love to get Seven ready for the next thing that we'll talk about, which is the date that she actually goes on.
I just don't know if it's, on the one hand, it's like the blind leading the blind, right? He has limited experience with relationships, more than Seven maybe, but it's still limited. But I love the doctor's presentation because, you know, he can't resist. He can't just give her the factual information. He can't just show her what to do. He's got to give her like hands-on training. He's got to make it the presentation. He's got to turn into the procreation comedy hour. For the doctor, everything is a performance in a way. You know, once he gets a taste of singing, you know, it's theater for him, even though he's, you know, it's well-intentioned. He's trying to help Seven, but it's a performance.
And eventually he becomes a writer. So he has this in him, like he wants to create this narrative, right?
He does. You know what I want to see is the procreation comedy hour as the new variety show that replaces Talent Night. Starring Tom and Bellana.
Open mic.
Yeah, that'll be a new show on the network before we know it.
Procreation comedy.
I'm not sure if Chris will allow that.
Special
episode. Me and Andy have been pushing
Dark.
Trek After Dark for a while now.
I have no deep thoughts. I love that the doctor is trying to. I mean, he doesn't just let Seven go on her first date and send her out the door. He's got to be there with her at the piano while she has her first date. Right? He's a hands-on instructor.
And it's
he
a good
likes
thing.
To watch.
It's a good thing that he was there. So yeah.
Well, yeah, because she ended up breaking a limb, but even so, what a Voyeur.
How far would this have gone? Like, if the date had gone better, would he have, like...
Right, would he have followed them to their quarters or something? Right.
Yeah, and then, afterwards, B'Elanna could go to Seven and say, so how do you like that? How does that
everyone
make you
on deck 11 know, yeah, everyone on deck 11 knows how that went.
There you go. Turnabout is fair play.
And that cargo bay picks up a lot of noise, so, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, right. It's like an echo chamber too. In there.
The whole ship heard everything.
Yeah.
I like where this is going.
Yeah,
the doctor's going to put it on his, the doctor's medical information channel. Can't remember the name of it.
He's going to do a whole special about it. Yeah.
Well, one thing I did wonder about with sort of character motivations with a doctor, like, because as I think about through the years, you know, the doctor was there obviously for Seven's biological needs, like, you know, making sure, you know, she had the right clothing, roll eyes. But anyway, sure
the cat suit.
Yeah. But making sure her biological and technological stuff was working properly, right? That's his thing. And then, you know, her nutritional supplements and all that. But like that crossing the line into her sociological and psychological development, I'm kind of wondering, like, because I mean, at the end of this episode, we can say why. But at the beginning of this episode, I'm like, why is he so invested in Seven?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when this conversation between the doctor and Seven first starts to happen about her social development and, you know, focusing on what happened with Tom and B'Elanna, Seven is getting an exam from the doctor. And in my sort of headcanon, Seven went to the doctor to get an exam knowing that she can get some therapy out of the doctor.
That's something I hadn't considered.
What kind of exam is she getting? Is it routine? Why did she go to sick bay all of a sudden?
Well, I mean, it was just a standard checkup, but still, maybe, yeah, she is prying for a little bit more. Almost like the hypochondriac who just needs the comfort. You know, nothing's really wrong, and even though deep down they know that, they just want the interaction, to talk, to be at ease, that sort of thing. Well, maybe that is the doctor for her. That's her confidant. Mm-hmm. She's not going to go to Captain Janeway with this problem necessarily.
Yeah, because she's still in Moody Teenager Seven, which is the...
Right, and Janeway is mom, so she's the last person she's going to talk to about this, actually.
I think one parallel here, if we look at Enterprise, for example, so on Enterprise, Phlox and T'Pol are the two aliens, and they would often eat together, and they talk, and they're sort of support for each other. And it's similar here in that I think Seven and the Doctor are probably the two who are the most on the outside, because it's not Neelix, even though he's the only Talaxian around, because he's just too easygoing and happy to be with everybody, and he's going to fit right in. And then B'Elanna is a Klingon, so she's used to humans and everyone else around, and other Vulcans and other people who are on the ship that we don't get to see very often. But I think that it makes sense that Seven would go to the Doctor when she needs to confide in someone. And I also think that, to your question, Philip, that the doctor has this desire himself to become more social and to develop himself as a person. And I also think he gets kind of bored sometimes because, yeah, he does have the holo emitter. He can move around, but still he has to be in sickbay most of the time because he's the doctor on the ship. And this is an opportunity for him to get excited about a new project and to sort of learn more about being human himself through Seven. You know, it's like when you're interested in a subject and you want to learn more about it, one of the best ways to learn more about it is to decide that you're going to do something. So if you're interested in a specific subject that you know something about, but you want to become more of an expert, you can create a podcast, right? Because by giving yourself that structure, you have to study, you have to learn more about it yourself along the way. And I see a little bit of that for the doctor here with Seven.
So in this episode, though, is this the first time the doctor starts to develop romantic feelings for Seven? Or is that the reason he's so interested in her romantic development?
Right, because this isn't the first social lesson.
I think it's the former.
No, but is this the first sort of romantic lesson?
Right? See,
No, I see it happening during this episode.
I think the moment, and if you're going to be melodramatic, and I am, that the moment the doctor gets hit by Cupid's arrow is during the singing in the cargo bay when he stops singing, looks at her, and you just see the little, like, bing, and the eyes go shoong like Moulin Rouge. You know, the eyes turn red, like he's hit, and I think that's it.
But I think, so if they were human, if the doctor were human, I would think that that's just the moment that he realized that he had these feelings that had been building up for quite a while prior to this. Now, since he's actually just a computer program, it could be that just suddenly it triggered something. Because he tells her later that when, or he tells, I guess it's the holographic version of her, that when she's not around, it's like there's a subroutine missing, right? So, yeah, I don't know.
I love it when he talks all sexy.
It's hard to say with him being a computer program, but to what you're asking, Zachary, I haven't rewatched Voyager straight through in a long time, so I can't really say for sure if I see any signs leading up to this. But I think if you just think about it naturally, if you put yourself, as I always say these days, in universe, you put yourself on the ship, probably it was something that was kind of building up for him for a while.
It's pretty clear he's in denial about it for a while, even in this episode.
Yeah.
Agreed. So I think the big component is just time, but it definitely, he becomes aware of it in this episode for sure. This isn't something that's been building up over the course of many episodes that he finally has to confess.
Not in the story writing.
No.
Yeah, no.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, one thing I love about this episode is Tom Paris. He tends to be the audience surrogate a lot of times, saying what we're thinking and being the guy who has to ask the question, what is that? Just to fill us in this wonderful universe. And here, I think he is so on point. You mentioned, Zachary, earlier, blind leading the blind, which is the Doctor guiding Seven on romantic pursuits for sure. Tom Paris actually says that, like, you? Really? This is the blind leading the blind. And he's absolutely right. I mean, by no means is the Doctor a seasoned veteran. I mean, they're essentially, what we've got here are two walking databases trying to figure out the emotional complexities of relationships.
Yeah.
But that's why they're perfect for each other. And that's why the episode plays out so well. And that's why it's almost, I don't want to say magical on screen, but it makes so much sense that this would happen.
You can only tell this kind of story in Star Trek, really. But I'm glad you mentioned Tom, because Tom is so compassionate towards the Doctor here. Like, the Doctor, he sees exactly what's going on in the Doctor. He's got to give him some advice. Just tell her how you feel. It may go well, it may not go well, but you can't just keep bottling it up.
Right. Oh, and it's such good advice, too. You know who else gives good advice in here is Harry Kim. Because Harry gets shot down, thinking maybe he's just one of the candidates Seven is considering to be her first date.
You know, I play clarinet.
He's just throwing it out there,
right.
just in case you haven't looked at my favorites on my Facebook page.
It's a Hail Mary pass, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah, it was a really good effort on his part, but really, he had his chance, and we know how that turned out. But then he's a really good friend to her, saying, well, maybe I can help you. And that's Harry Kim, and that's
or is he sabotaging her?
He gets shot down and just comes right back up and helps her.
He's not impressed with her two candidates.
Yeah.
Well, no, because I think he was okay with Chapman, because he says, well, I mean, he really shoots nice down the first one, but then Chapman, he's like, okay, Chapman's a good guy. Like, okay, like, I'll give you that.
Except
if you insist.
Paris knew that guy had a reputation for being nervous around women, which I think Harry knew. This is a setup from the beginning.
No, wait a minute. I think a guy being nervous around Seven, though, okay, for one thing, that's not an unusual thing, but also, given how Seven has never done this before, it might be the perfect match in a way, right?
Yeah.
Where they're both kind of inexperienced and awkward and don't really know what to do with each other, and they have to learn it as they go.
This is sixth grade all over again.
That makes sense to me. He seemed like a great candidate. Way better than Chakotay, spoiler alert.
But on a normal date, Char, when someone says, I'm nervous, the other person doesn't go, elaborate.
Well, that's, right.
That makes you even more uncomfortable.
You know, that's the difference.
At first, though,
if you had two awkward people, it'd be, yeah, me too, and you'd have the sweaty palms, and you'd be comparing how sweaty the other person is.
Unless you were dating Vanilla Ice, Chris, that might happen.
I got to say, that doesn't it seem like Seven really likes Chapman at the very beginning? I mean, she says, I worked with him on an away mission. He seemed efficient. Like,
efficient.
Ooh, baby, he was efficient.
Okay,
that
now,
works for me.
My question, when I heard that, my question was, is efficiency really what you want in a lover?
Oh.
Well,
you really don't.
If this is the subtopic
details
we're going down, Chris, we can go down here.
Yeah, and remember, you started it.
Yes, I'm the one who drove us off into this ditch that we're now heading into.
That's right.
You know, Chris, you're like the new stereotype I learned in this episode. Apparently, Klingons can't drive. I didn't know that was
a
stereotype.
Philip, I got to tell you, I mean, you know, I'm sure you've driven a 69 Mustang before, right? You know, the clutch is pretty tricky.
Oh, man. Go ahead, Tom. Mansplain this to me a little bit more.
Please. And give details.
Okay, let's talk about the most awkward date ever, since we're already talking about Chapman here. It's hilarious. Oh, you know, let's one thing real quick before we get into the actual date. The practice for the date, which goes back to the doctor's lessons in love, with them reading the script of meeting someone in the bar, so hilarious, and especially how Jeri Ryan delivers the final line, "I do not require a liquid supplement at this time." Just finished with it. But
I was, because I think they used it before. I was waiting for the part where, like, don't read the stage direction, Seven. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah.
I love that she takes that final look at the pad before she actually walks over to the holographic gate.
I love that.
And she has to check her lines.
Yeah.
Line.
It's so well done. Yeah, and yet she's mastered it. She's ready to do this.
She looks at her space iPhone and she's like, come here.
She's like, our small talk is terminated. And then she walks over. I have mastered this lesson.
I want to use that in real life. You know, the line, the small talk is terminated. I gotta use that.
You've used that yourself, Zachary?
I need to use that more
often when someone's trying to talk to me and I don't want to talk to them, like if I'm on the subway or something.
Yeah.
This small talk is terminated.
Now Riker could have used that when he met Commander Hutch, call me Hutch, Hutchinson. That probably would have worked then.
That would have been great. Now, the actual date, the date with Chapman. This is the other Seinfeld connection in this episode. When they bring the lobsters, do you remember the episode with the woman Jeri was dating who had man hands? And the way that one of the things was they do this close-up. They go on to the date and she orders the lobster and they show the close-up of her cracking the lobster open. So you've got Mr. Pitt.
About that, but you're right. Oh my God.
You've got Ian Abercrombie, the actor who played Mr. Pitt, who plays Abbott in here. And now you've got Borg hands cracking open a lobster.
Also, like, and
she's got Borg hands. I love it.
Yeah.
I guess I blame Chapman. Who orders lobster on a first date? I mean, goodness, creaky.
It's a delicacy.
And I love the pacing of it. Like, they move on from the lobster. Like, he tries dessert. Okay, no dessert. How about a dance?
No, hold on a little bit. And I know this is TV where you don't eat, but like, oh, you've opened the lobster. Let's order dessert. I'm like, I think that's an honest question from Seven if we're being terminated early. I'm like, who orders dessert after like the first?
Yeah, he's in escape mode. It's not going well. He's out of there.
Beam me up.
Well, no, actually, I think he's trying too hard. He's trying to read her, and he's not getting much of a good response, so he doesn't know what to do. So he's just throwing himself through so many different motions that none of them work.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while since he's been on a date, so.
Well, yeah, indeed.
Apparently, like, poor guy. 6 years. What season is this?
Right.
Yeah.
Chris, you were talking about the man hands, you know, cut to. Whose legs were that when they were dancing? Because that was a very sharp cut. It's like, we're not doing a long, it's like, well, this is just the stunt doubles, like, oh, Jeri and the other guy are wrong. All right, you just need to put on the pants. Come on, we're just doing quick pickups here.
Well, in looking at the credits for this, there is Rita Nowak, who is a stand-in for Jeri Ryan.
Is Jeffrey Combs one of the legs?
Just one of them. Yes, Philip. Jeffrey Combs was one of the legs, and Rita Nowak was the other leg. It's a very complicated shoot. I think Robbie did a great job directing this episode.
He really
Jeffrey
did.
Combs was the second date.
Okay, so other thoughts on the date here. I thought that Chapman, for someone who it was already established is very nervous about women, and then this date is clearly not going well at all, I thought he was doing a pretty good job of trying to hold things together.
No, I mean, I think it went well.
He seemed to step to the plate with the...
Other than the broken arm, but I mean, all things together. That was a good date. Everything was awkward until the broken arm.
Was that a good date, Char?
Well, I don't know if it was a good date, but Chapman really is putting up with her so well, all things considered. But let's be honest. I mean, once you've torn your dancing partner's ligament, you're either in it for life or it's a clean break, and you're never going to speak to each other again, and I think we all know which way this one went.
No, it wasn't a clean break.
He was creeping
break.
Up on being it smooth was... once the dancing started, right? He started to lead, and he was getting his confidence going.
But then she broke his ligament, and then, okay, I'm out of here.
I mean, if you're gonna focus on one detail, Char, okay, glass half full.
Just one ligament is not a big deal, then? Okay, we have different standards.
I mean, the key is always, do you get a second date? Which I feel like it was in between. He's like, I look forward to doing this again sometime.
Yeah. Someday.
Someday.
After my arm heals.
That was just a bold-faced lie.
Yes. Yeah, that was the, like, don't call me, I'll call you from Chapman, right?
Yeah, don't call me and I won't call you either. That's
so
right.
So what's the post story when they're walking the next week and pass each other in the corridor? Does he, like, pretend like he doesn't see her?
They make that awkward eye contact, you know, and they sort of slow down, like, maybe should I talk to him?
No, I think he has this new thing he does, like, every time he passes her on the ship, he does, like, a thing with his hands like he's cracking a lobster open.
Or his old dance injury starts acting up.
I was thinking he was just a little self-conscious that he didn't know the singular plural of unimatrix and unimatrices.
Well, that was the other guy. That was the guy that she was talking to.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. It's a tough act to follow.
During the training.
That is. Yeah. I mean, that was a good joke about the family. I mean, that's...
Borg do not have families. They have unimatrices.
So it's a family heirloom.
What I love, and it's too bad that they didn't actually do this episode on Voyager, but the Unimatrix family reunion episode was going to be a great one.
Now, is this like Real Housewives style? Like on Bravo, where you have the Unimatrix family reunion?
I was thinking it's more like Sister Wives.
See Ambassador Toman come to that reunion.
Have him get drunk all over again. What's up, bro?
Well, he would be hosting it, obviously.
I was thinking, you know, one of nine is the, there's one of nine, then there's like the eight sister wives, you know, seven, two of nine, three of nine.
Oh my God.
Though, as a.
Wow. That gives the collective a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
Meet my sisters, two and three. Those are unusual names.
I have to say, as a somewhat theatrical and literary person, the doctor's line about like, well, Romeo and Juliet, you know, then had a few bumps along the road. I'm like, but they died at the end. Is that the example we're using? I don't feel like
Chapman, not a good example.
Chapman may have died at the end if the dance had continued, Philip.
Though they were both 14 too, so I don't know, maybe it works.
Well, we don't see him again. You never know, right? So,
oh man. Okay. Any more thoughts on the most awkward date ever?
I still think it's a little creepy awkward that the doctor went along.
Well, I think it's
well. Yeah, he's the third wheel here, sort of. Yeah.
I'm a doctor, not a voyeur.
He's,
and I love that
but he is.
He's the accompanist. He's playing piano, and then when something goes wrong, it's just so well done that he stops playing piano. There's this dramatic pause, and he goes back to playing piano like everything.
He's like the talent show mom, who goes to the talent show with her kids, or like the American Idol contestant who's auditioning. They make it to Hollywood Week, and their mom's there in the audience, like giving them tips, right?
Oh man, yeah, trying to coach from the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
Next on Dance Moms.
Or like the choir teacher that plays piano for the performance, you know.
Ugh, that's awful stuff.
I do love that the doctor downloaded the ancient Western piano program subroutine of stopping playing during dramatic moments.
Yeah.
So everyone can look around and then start playing again.
Yeah. He selected that well. I think he knew there was going to be some trouble along the way.
And also, I couldn't help but thinking when... Also, is this a revelation that Seven can't drink synthahol?
No, this was in an earlier episode where it affected her.
Okay.
Yeah, timeless.
Timeless, right.
We are as one.
Because I couldn't help but thinking, like, you don't drink, you don't smoke. What do?
You regenerate.
It's subtle innuendo.
No, you go around the ship recording what everyone else is doing.
That's true, yeah. Maybe the doctor's not a voyeur, but she sure is.
And you know what? I'm just going to throw it out there, 24th century. I would like it if a woman called me beautiful one time.
That was so funny.
Equality.
I love his reaction. Kind of like he doesn't know how to react to that.
But I don't know if he was so surprised that she was telling him, as a man, you are also beautiful today, or just the fact that she was saying that to him at all, because everyone's sort of kind of scared of Seven.
He's like, I'm updating the personal log tonight.
Well, I love the way she asked him out on the date. You know, she tells him, be punctual. There's fear in his eyes. Like, you know, okay, you're asking me on a date. He doesn't understand it. Then all of a sudden, you know, she tells him, be punctual. And you can see him like, okay, I will. Fear in his eyes.
Okay,
yes,
well,
ma'am.
The other thing I want to talk about here as we get fairly close to an hour already is the B-plot, Leisure Suit Caddy and Neelix's Menu of Love. Because Ambassador Toman, it's like Leisure Suit Larry came to Voyager. Right. Do you remember that old video game from the 80s?
Vaguely.
I've heard of it.
It's oh, so...
yeah, I do. Chat it's up so... woman at bar.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Order another drink. But it's so well done, and Scott Thompson does a really great job of portraying this drunk alien. I think it's a little bit over the top. As far as A and B plots go, I kind of like it when they're maybe a little bit more connected to each other. But this B plot is very funny. And the way he gets more and more drunk all the way through and Neelix is trying to keep him under control, it really is hilarious. So, Philip, what did you think about Ambassador Toman?
Well, I mean, I did enjoy it, and I thought it was fun. You know, the whole doesn't match the A plot. I think there's an argument of, like, it doesn't really, but it is fun, and I love it.
Yeah, it does a little bit.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy, but there's a back of my brain that goes, like, haven't we seen this before in Trek? I'm thinking, like, Allegiance and TNG, where you have, like, the one Worf has to supervise, and at the end, like, Worf smacks him down. The guy's like, finally, I wanted to fight. And then I'm thinking of TOS, when Scotty has to get the alien drunk under the table. So I'm like, you know, we've seen this before, but it's nevertheless, having said that, you know, especially with TTJ doing the Who Did It Better episodes, I mean, it is fun, and I do like it, because I do love Neelix being out of control. We don't often see that, because he's the morale officer, he's always the nice guy, but this is the, you have to be the nice guy with the guy who's completely out of control. You know, it's like the old 50s, it's like I Love Lucy or something, like, the boss is coming to dinner tonight, and, like, everything's on fire in the kitchen, and, like, yeah. You know, what?
The conveyor belt is going at warp speed. Yeah.
And also, I have to...
And actually, I see it almost as a role reversal, too. I mean, if you think to the earlier days, Neelix is very much a loose cannon. He doesn't know the Starfleet rules, and he's way too eager to help, and he gets himself into trouble a lot. Now he's the person in charge, and he's got to deal with a loose cannon. How do you like it, huh?
Exactly.
And also, I have to wonder... I mean, I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway. Whose program in the holodeck had those two ladies? I mean, Paris. The answer is Paris. I know the answer is Paris.
Now what,
but...
does B'Elanna know about that program?
It's a la carte. You know, the ambassador just, asked for what he wanted.
Well, I mean, it's Sandrine's. It's the Cheers of Voyager. Everybody knows your name. It's where you go to hang out, and there's a lot of people there. And can't help it if there's beautiful ladies there, too.
Now, this is the last time we see Sandrine's. Were you sad about that, Char?
It is, because I love Sandrine's. People who listen to TTJ regularly know how much I love Sandrine's. It is the place where I would want to go hang out on the holodeck, get a drink, maybe play some pool with Captain Janeway, hang out with the guys. I mean, it is the place. I really
Wait, more
did
than
like
Fairhaven?
Sandrine's.
I know, someone has to play the Tristan role here.
Sorry, Tristan's not here. I'm not going to speak up for him. Fairhaven sucked.
But Char, someone deleted my pool table.
We'll get it back. It's a hologram. Chill.
I also love, why is Paris there? Like, does he have like a push button alert, like Sandrine's program now in use? He's like, hey.
Well, it came up on
it. I think he does. He's got notifications.
It came up
on
his iPad. On his Apple Watch, Philip. His little alert. You know, Sandrine's now running.
Right. Yeah. What? I didn't start that. I don't have holodeck time this week.
Philip, I'm glad you're mentioning this, because at the very end of the episode, when the Doctor is talking to Holographic 7, the door chime goes off before Real 7 comes in. So we know there's a door chime on the holodeck, but sometimes it's not used. Like in this time, Tom Paris just walks right in, no big deal. So you know,
I think
like
you have to request it.
Can you lock the holodeck door?
No, we've always had this discussion on Earl Grey that it wasn't until the Enterprise...
Do not disturb?
It wasn't until the Enterprise...
Like hanging a tie on the door?
The Enterprise E was the first starship, the most advanced starship, to have a privacy gate. Installed into
oh,
the
yeah,
holodeck.
Right.
So yeah. Until then, you just barge on in.
Well, that was, you know, naturally, Philip, taking lessons from the Enterprise D, building them into the Enterprise E, after everything that happened with Barclay in particular, it's only natural that they would have sort of like a barrier where you...
I was thinking like when they call for an arch, you know, they just hang a curtain from the arch.
Well, that would be good for Sandrine's, right? Yeah. Yeah, make it fit
it
in.
Could be.
I love a curtain because it'd just be like the shink. Oh, sorry, shink.
Yeah. That would be really handy in Sandrine's, actually. Like, if Sandrine wants to go make out with the Doctor or something, she just goes, takes him behind that curtain. Shink. And then you hear various sounds that Seven is recording. And then when they're done, shink. All is well.
Pay no attention to that hologram behind the curtain.
You know, talking about doors, my favorite, one of my favorite lines, and talking about Leisure Suit Caddy here, one of my favorite lines is when they come in and the doors open. It's at the end when they're going to the transporter room, right? And he has a hangover and the doors open and he's like, oh, those doors are loud. It's perfectly timed.
Now, Char, I'm sure I'm sure TTJ has a running list of this. What magic can nanoprobes not do? So hangover cure we now have?
Well, they didn't cure the hangover, clearly. Oh, at least not fully. But it does seem like nanoprobes can do just about anything, to the point where it's pretty much a Voyager trope. You run into a problem you can't otherwise solve, nanoprobes. That's what you do.
Just wait till, I'm pretty sure, in a future J.J. Abrams movie, Philip, they're going to have some nanoprobes around so that they can resurrect Kirk after he's been killed again.
Man.
Oh, boy.
Great knowledge.
Is that how they're going to maybe resurrect the Enterprise after it's been destroyed,
oh,
allegedly?
Oh, yes. They will gather all the pieces in a bucket, and then they'll drop some nanoprobes in, and then it'll come back.
And it'll rebuild it.
It'll rebuild
These are magic alternate universe nanoprobes.
Right. Yes. I mean, they'll beam the wreckage from the other side of the universe, you know, to Earth.
Which only takes about 40 seconds in the Abramsverse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no problem. It's cool.
though to me, I don't know, maybe, obviously I've seen the episode, though I have forgotten a little bit, like the holographic in with 7 of 9 I forgot about, so that was a little surprising. But as far as the B-plot, it was almost like a little anticlimactic. Like, I got like the ha-ha. I mean, it was good. It was good. But I was just like, oh, that's it? I mean, okay. You know. What stays in Voyager?
So here's the question then, Philip. Did you want the Doctor to pursue a relationship with 7 of 9? Because we're left with a lot of unrequited feelings here.
Well, it got me thinking, other than, of course, Odo, you don't often see unrequited love on Trek. Because, I mean, you know, theoretically, then he has to deal with this, like, the entire time. Like, oh, there's 7. Like, what does he do when he going down the corridor with her? You know, like, suddenly.
Well, he could just turn himself off.
Right? She's just walking, like, why is this hollow emitter on the floor? Oh, well.
I'll take this back.
She keeps taking it back to sick bay over and over.
You dropped this.
Is there a little engraving on the back? If lost, please return to sick bay.
But wouldn't it be funny, like if you think, like, you keep bumping into somebody and they run away and they can say, oh, I wasn't there, I don't know what you're talking about. And 7 will be like, why do I keep finding your hollow emitter on the floor in places where I was?
Like, always in front of my quarters, too.
It's like those keychains from car rental places. You know those keychains that say, if lost, put in a mailbox? If lost, bring to the transporter room, and they just beam it back to sickbay. Yeah.
They have to do it anonymously. They can't report who found it.
Okay, but it's a good question. So, I mean, Zachary, what do you think? Should the writers have pursued a relationship between the Doctor and 7 ongoing?
Well, you guys know that I'm kind of a relationshipper. I love the relationships they do and they tease you with in Voyager. I like Janeway and Chakotay. I am Team Doctor and 7 of 9, so I'm disappointed. I think it's just another instance of the magic reset button, right? They don't want to go there. They can't change the show too much. They can't introduce any drama. You know, that's what Deep Space Nine is for. In Voyager, they have to keep it episodic and just hit that reset button. So there's no consequences.
Yeah. No,
it's not realistic. You don't get much follow up on it.
I don't see this as a reset button. And I'm one of the people who always complains about Voyager and its reset button. But this is not a reset button to me, because I think that you can have two people who have feelings for each other and they decide we're not going to pursue this because
it never happens.
This is a situation
they're
on a small ship. But also, again, the Doctor's not a person. He's a computer program. So it's very easy for him to just say, okay, yeah, that's not going to work, and then forget about it.
Is that how you read it? You think the Doctor has just kind of dealt with it and now he's okay with it?
I don't really think that that's what happens, but I think that that can happen. So by the writers not pursuing this storyline in future episodes, I don't see it as a reset button. I just see it as sort of a natural thing that, yeah, I mean, that could happen. It's perfectly understandable that these two people wouldn't pursue that.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Chris. I think it's not a matter of the reset button. It's 7 pretty much told the Doctor how she felt about their relationship right before he was about to confess his feelings toward her, which gave him all the information he needed to know, which was to back off. She might regard him highly, but she's not really interested romantically in him. I mean, she friend-zoned him pretty hardcore.
Oh, I was hoping we weren't going to use the word.
So he's got to deal with that.
Now, she could have just said something like, remove your feelings from me or I will break your back.
Okay, right. But do you think she friend zoned him because he didn't he wasn't a bit, not to say aggressive, he didn't pursue her enough when she starts to realize, hey, we've got a great connection. We always talk directly, we say what we mean. You know, they clearly have a rapport, she's starting to realize it herself. You know, that's when the doctor should have made his move.
It's just like in every romantic comedy, she's totally oblivious to the fact that he's completely perfect for her. Because
yeah, she's oblivious. Yeah,
he's kind of her best friend. They're very close, yeah. And
now she has to,
you know,
like
that sort of thing.
Get married. You know, she's gonna have like a wedding to this really terrible guy, and then he has to crash it. And it's, you know, my best Borg's wedding. It's gonna be a great summer rom-com.
See, that's what happened. That's what happened when they got back to Earth. Seven and Chakotay were gonna get married. The doctor crashed it. And it was all for the better because that ultimately led to Janeway and Chakotay getting together, which they do in the novel verse, spoiler alert. And then Seven and the Doctor are free to pursue their own interests.
You know, Shar, at the Janeway-Chakotay wedding, the most unexpected thing about that wedding for me was that the monkey was the best man.
Well, actually, in my universe, he officiates.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah,
From a tree stump?
I have this whole made-up story where they go back to New Earth because they have slipstream technology in the novelverse, and so they go back to New Earth, get married there, and the monkey officiates.
He does it from a tree stump, right? He's like sitting
of
on
course.
Top of the tree stump. Yeah,
okay. The tree they discovered him, and they point that flashlight at him. He does it from there.
And do they serve? Yeah, it's really cute. Do they serve the champagne at the reception from the bathtub? That Chakotay.
Yes, they do. It's still there. They clean it out. It's great.
Instead of having like the shuttle pod just married, I thought they would just be in the tub and it would just say just married on it.
No, they'll attach the tub to the back of the Delta Flyer with streamers and cans on the back of the tub, and then Tom and B'Elanna will just fly them around New Earth.
Yeah, well, they had to tow it back to Voyager because Catherine wants to keep it and put it in her quarters.
Well, she can put it in
the
ready
room.
Ultimately
become their quarters.
There's plenty
she's
of room
got plenty
in the
of space,
room.
Sure.
Well, you know she does. Yeah, yeah. Or they put it in the ready room and it's a hot tub.
Yeah, right.
Hot. Now, I think, honestly, we're giving Kirsten Beyer a lot of great ideas here for the novelverse because as close as they've gotten, Janeway and Chakotay are not married yet. She really needs to step on that. I mean, I keep reading novel after novel after novel and it's not happening. I'm getting a little impatient.
Well, sure. I'm sure some of the listeners are saying anytime Chakotay's in the tub, it's automatically a hot tub.
Well, it is. They're not wrong.
I was thinking Janeway keeps that bathtub in the holodeck so she can do the shink of the shower curtain above the arch, right? You know?
That would be kind of funny.
Well, one thing I wondered about, I know you've all made this point, Shar, on TTJ, and I think I agree with it because I think, Zachary, my instinct is yes, I do want Seven and Doctor to get together, but then I think about what you all have often said. Seven is like a teenager. And he's programmed, he's an adult. And so it's almost taking advantage because there's a part where the doctor's trying to tap dance with Paris, like, oh, she's my student. But that's true. He would actually be taking advantage of her by pursuing.
They walk this fine line. Sometimes he's a mentor and sometimes he's a confidant and a best friend, right?
Yeah, but she's just not mature.
So which one is stronger?
I mean, she's not mature enough to know what a relationship is at this point.
Right. I mean, I make the same argument with Chakotay. That he's taking advantage of that. I mean, she's progressed, definitely, but she's not ready for a real relationship. And what does he see in her?
Okay, wait, though. It's not just the doctor nudging her that direction. Captain Janeway is nudging her that direction, too.
Just to leave her alone. Stop being moody teenager. Go find the boy.
It didn't happen.
But, Philip, the doctor is programmed with all the great doctors in history, which means that he could just activate his Doogie Howser mode. And then...
Only if at the end of the episode, Chris, I see the doctor boot up his laptop and then type about the whole episode.
Right. That would be a great ending.
With a couple of images for Space Shutterstock to boot.
My only remaining question of this whole discussion about the Doctor and Seven is what role the nanoprobes play in holographic Borg procreation?
Wow, now that's an interesting topic. That sounds like a topic for Metatrex.
Uh-oh.
Now that is an image for Space Shutterstock,
that's right.
Where you see all the nanoprobes
obliterating
the ovum fortress. Yes.
Yeah, it gives Borg sphere a new meaning, right?
Well, because, you know, there's so many cross-special children, I mean, there has to be some artificialness in order to be creating all these cross-special children. So that would be a good meta trick of how, you know, artificial versus natural and, you know, all that.
Yeah, so if a hologram and a Borg reproduce, or I mean, is the half the DNA holographic? Like, what happens? Oh. What happens with that child? Does it have to stay in the hologram?
For a second, Zachary, I thought you were telling one of Tom Paris's racist holographic jokes.
So did I. I thought that was the beginning of a joke.
I'm like, is this allowed?
No.
I mean, like,
wow.
Can you just, what EO is going on here on Voyager?
But Philip, it's okay because it's actually the Doctor who made up all those jokes.
Yeah, and but that's his work.
Paris was just stealing his material.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, great artists steal, right? So,
all right, guys. Well, we have passed an hour, so we should wrap up here with our final thoughts and our rating. So, Zachary, what's your final thought and your rating on this one?
I just think this is a fun episode. Like I said, I'm a relationshiper. I love the idea of the Doctor and Seven of Nine getting together. That happens in my head canon. The Doctor and Seven of Nine get together eventually. They're perfect for each other in my mind. So it's a fun episode. I like the Doctor's comedy fest. I like the B plot with the ambassador, you know, getting drunk, thinking of Voyager as the pleasure cruise, the Voyager pleasure cruise. So it's a great episode.
And it is. Let's be honest.
What I don't like about it though is that the Doctor and Seven of Nine don't get together. So in honor of the species Roba rubifolia, the 12 flowers that the Doctor sends to the holographic seven, I got to give this 10 out of 12. That's my max rating. 10 out of 12 Borg family heirlooms.
I love that Zachary has a scale of 12 for rating episodes.
just in honor of that bunch of.
Well, that's his size of his Unimatrix is 12.
12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I'm third of 12, yeah.
So, how about you, Shar?
Yeah, I agree. It's a great episode. Definitely worth the watching. A lot of great stuff going on here. I do not think that Seven and the Doctor should have gotten together in the end. I like the unrequited love thing. Not all relationships work out. Not all relationships are perfect. And even though they are perfect for each other, that's what makes such an emotional pull toward the end, where you're just screaming at the TV because you do want them to get together. But it's not going to happen, and I think that's very realistic. And so, even though there's that whole thing with Chakotay in the end that makes me very bitter, and the Doctor's a much better candidate, I still like the way this played out. It's very good. So, I want to give it 8.5 dances.
All right. How about you, Philip?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good episode because I'm doing my Voyager rewatch, and so this is a little ahead of actually where I am. But I really enjoyed it. And I go back and forth whether I like the she's all thatting that goes on with the Doctor and Paris. Like, am I watching a 90s movie? And then, you know, when Seven takes off her hair, that's the 24th century equivalent of her taking off her glasses, and she was a hot beauty all the time. Oh my gosh. Oh, she was just a quantum physics nerd, but no, guys. I'm like, come on. Whatever. But though I'm sure Jerry Ryan probably did enjoy letting her hair down literally for the good part of this episode. But no, I really enjoy it, and I love the music sequences. I've played that You Are My Sunshine. That is my favorite on my YouTube. I will play that all the time because I do sing with gusto. And I think for my rating, I give it 8 out of 10 sad musical endings.
Oh, okay. That's appropriate. Yes.
Downer.
All right. Well, I think this is a great episode. It's really, really fun. For me, actually, the A-plot with the Doctor and Seven is funnier than the obvious humor of Ambassador Toman getting drunk and Neelix trying to keep him under control. I think, you know, the thing about Voyager, well, all of Star Trek, I mean, they do a great job of casting, but Robert Picardo is just a fantastic actor, and Jerry Ryan is as well. And putting them together here and giving them this material gave them an opportunity to just really play off of each other in a really fantastic way. And it's just a fun episode. The relationship thing, I think it's probably best that they did not write a relationship for the Doctor and Seven to run through the rest of the series. But I do think that they're the most ideal for each other on the ship. Maybe not the most ideal couple, because I really like Tom and B'Elanna, But in terms of who's right for Seven and who's right for the Doctor, I think Seven and the Doctor fit well together.
And yet you still don't like that they get together. Or you like that they don't get together.
Well, I think it would be an odd storyline. I mean, I think it's too... Under the circumstances of Voyager being lost in the Delta Quadrant, making its way home, I think it would be a little bit odd to have that as part of the story. But I don't know. I mean, if they did it, maybe it would be great if they had written it that way. But they didn't. And I think it's probably the best, you know, for me. So I'm going to give this episode 10 photos of Species 8472 making out. All right. Well, before we go, Philip, tell everyone where they can find you around the network and around the interwebs.
Well, they can find me each and every week here on Trek.fm on Earl Grey, talking all things The Next Generation with my wonderful co-hosts, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. And they can also find me on the Twitter, where my handle is NC Public Servant. That's NC for the non-consummation of the Dr. Seven relationship.
Be careful with that, nice. Because some people might think that's a Star Trek handle, NCC Public Servant.
That's right. No, it's an experimental one.
Oh, so you're the NX
Public
Servant. So
it's NX?
Just one C.
No, that's my After Hours one.
Oh, so I thought that was XXX.
No, yeah. That's my... We'll talk later.
I'm sorry. I'm getting your accounts confused.
Philip has so many accounts. Yes.
The NXXX.
TweetDeck is your friend, my friends.
All right, Zachary, where can people find you on the network and around the interwebs?
Yeah, you can find me as one half of Trek FM's show on Star Trek and philosophy with Mike Morrison, my co-host, on Meta Treks. It's our show on the philosophy of Star Trek. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle there is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's ZacharyFruhling.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Oh, Chris, that was so much fun talking someone to watch over me with Zachary and Philip. We did try to take it off the rails a few times, and you reined us in. And then I do recall one instance where you did take us back into the ditch, but we all enjoyed it and then promptly brought ourselves back out of it. So, you know, all in all, it was a great ride, and what a great episode, too.
Yeah, I did take us into the ditch one time. Now, it's too bad that people aren't getting the complete unedited version of this show, because there was one other interesting thing that happened. They missed the moment when I made my Alf reference in this episode. They missed the moment where your cat Teddy came wandering into the room and you had to take him out. And then I was holding a picture of Alf up to the screen while you were doing that. And Alf was yelling, "Come back, Teddy, come back, Teddy."
Yes, and unfortunately, I had taken him out of the room at that point, kicked him out, shut the door practically in his face, and I couldn't bear the thought of doing it again, so yeah. He had to miss out on Alf.
Poor guy, poor guy.
I know. I have a lot of making up to do once we're done. Poor Teddy. He just wants to be on the podcast. He wants to be on meow.fm and doesn't understand why you won't accept his application.
That sounds like a great endeavor. You should try that.
But it was great
talking about this episode today. It was really fun. I hadn't seen this episode in quite a long time until I watched it twice before the recording. And it's a really fun episode. It's got to be one of my favorite Voyager episodes, actually.
It's
certainly
great.
Certainly for the comedic value. I love Robert Picardo in particular. He's so good.
He is such a gem. I mean, it really is great that they did embrace his talents on the show. Yes, it does get a little heavy with Janeway, Seven, and the Doctor in the later seasons, but I guess in a way, I mean, they played to their strengths. So can you totally blame them?
Well, no, that's what you got to do.
In a way, but, yeah.
So let us know what you think about this episode. And if you love it as much as we did, what do you think about Robert Picardo? What do you think about Jerry Ryan? And the best place to do that, if you want to have a real conversation with us and other listeners of the show and the network, is in the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our closed listeners group. Shar, tell people a little bit about that and how to get there.
Well, all you have to do is type in the Babel Conference in the Facebook search bar and then click to join. Someone will let you in pretty quickly because there's a few of us who moderate it. And it's for Trek FM listeners only. You're the only ones who know about it. And despite that factoid, we have well over 1,000 members now.
Over 1,200 now, sure.
1,200? Wow, okay. Yes. That just blows my mind. That's amazing. it is a very solid, very growing community, a very busy community. Anytime I log into Facebook, I have an infinite number of Babel Conference posts to scroll through. So to be quite honest, if you want to talk to me personally, please tag me. I may or may not miss your comment.
That's a good point. And if you want to talk to me, you have to tag me because I, unfortunately, with my work schedule, don't have time to just go browse. I love chatting with everyone, and I do peek in from time to time and see what's going on and comment, but I'm always happy to talk to you if you tag me in your question or your post so that I get a notification about it, and then I'll come over. So yeah, good point.
Yeah, same here. I mean, it is a very busy group, and it is very easy to miss new stuff. So the Facebook group is a lot of fun. There's a great conversation there about all the things. We have threads for each of the podcasts that we release throughout the week. A lot of just general Trek stuff. I mean, anything and everything, really, as long as it pertains to Trek and or the 602 Club.
That's right, yeah. So we have non-Trek stuff in there as well, because Matthew Rushing and the 602 Club, they talk about non-Trek geek fandoms, and they do that with other hosts from all around the network and some of our friends from other podcasts outside of Trek FM as well. Indeed. So yeah, just go over to Facebook, type B-A-B-E-L, Babel, into the search field. It should come up in the list. Just click join and we'll let you on in. Now, I know not everyone is on Facebook, so there are other ways for you to get in touch with us. If you're on Twitter, you can find the network at Trek FM. You can also go to our website at trek.fm/contact and use the form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that'll come to me by email. Or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. That's the word speak and the word pipe together. .com/trekfm, and you can send a voicemail. Just using the mic on your phone or your tablet or your computer, that's all you need. And you can record it and upload it right there from the page. And we would love to hear your voice on there too. Shar, I'd like to take a moment to thank our associate producers here on the Ready Room. It's thanks to our associate producers and all of our patrons on Patreon that we're able to produce this show in the first place and the whole network and get that out there. For the Ready Room specifically, I of course want to thank Renee Roberts, who is Mares_1701 on Twitter. Renee is a huge supporter of the network and the Ready Room. She's been with us since the very beginning, almost, when I started Trek FM. Wonderful woman who just loves Star Trek, loves Trek FM, and does so much for us. So Renee, thank you so much for your support. I'd also like to thank Sam Piasek. Sam is also helping us get the Ready Room out as an associate producer and a supporter on Patreon. And Sam, we really appreciate what you do for us here as well. And then there's this guy, Shar. I love my associate producers, but sometimes I'm a little like not sure about them.
Yeah.
And Zachary Frueling would be the one I'm talking about right here. This guy, Zachary
Who's
Frueling.
Who's that punk?
I don't know. I mean, he's like, well, I'll tell you who he is. He's a guy who keeps sleeping on the cot over here in the corner. Yeah.
So. Just because you're an associate producer doesn't mean you get automatic rights to the cot. I'm just saying.
That's right. I mean, Renee and Sam, you know, we can set up two more cots if you guys want to come over as well and hang out here in the Ready Room.
We need to use the Patreon funds to get more cots.
Exactly. No, I'm just kidding. I love all of our patrons.
Yeah,
all of
no,
our
Zach is so great, and I love Metatrex. It's been a huge education. I told Zach just how much on the other side of the room, but I, you know, for anybody who doesn't have much of an education in philosophy, this is a great podcast to listen to. You will learn so much, and you'll be interested in it because it has a Star Trek connection.
Yeah, it's very, very in-depth. So again, thank you, Renee, Sam, Zachary, for your support here as associate producers. If you would like to support the show and the network, and you don't have to support the Ready Room if you're a fan of To the Journey, if you're a fan of The Orb or Metatrex or Saturday Morning Trek or whatever, you can become an associate producer through Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out everything that you need to know about supporting the network. We're a listener-supported network, which means that we do need your help in order to keep this going. It takes a lot of money to run this network. We push a lot of data. We have to pay for storage. We have to pay for bandwidth every time someone downloads an episode. Shar, you might be a little bit surprised at how much data we pushed out in February. Now, February was a short month, right? 29 days this year because it's a leap year.
Right.
So longer than usual. But nevertheless, during those 29 days, we transferred 6.5 terabytes of data to our listeners. So that costs quite a bit, and we do need your help to cover that cost, as well as all the other costs associated with running the network and producing shows.
Now, granted, that's not quite the same as 30,000 gigaquads, but it's up there.
It's not, but it's getting up there. It's getting up there.
Boy.
So every little bit helps. We do have great perks for you. You can become an associate producer, as I mentioned. You can get on mic and talk Star Trek with us on the roundtable, the patrons roundtable, which we do. And that goes into the master feed for everyone to listen to. We also have an exclusive website called Patron Zone that you get access to at the $5 per month level and higher. And we do early show releases. For example, the latest episode of The Orb, which won't come out for another week, that's already been in there for the last 3 days. So if you were a patron, you could go to Patron Zone and you could listen to that right now. This episode of The Ready Room, in fact, will be available in Patron Zone for our patrons about a week before it comes out to everyone. So that's one of the perks you can get there. We also have wallpapers and avatars and ringtones, and sometimes we put video clips in there as well. Various things that you can get. So you can find out all about it at patreon.com/trekfm, patreon.com/trekfm. Please head over and check it out. We really appreciate all the support we get from all of you guys who are supporting us there. Thank you so much for your help in keeping Trek FM going. All right, Char, when you're not, you know, browsing the library of, let's just say, interesting material that Seven of Nine has available for you, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on the network co-hosting To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Woohoo! With my wonderful co-host, Tristan Rudell, the international sex symbol himself. We haven't brought that up in a long time.
No, we
and
haven't.
I felt like we need to bring it back.
The ISS. Yes.
He is the ISS. So new episodes of that come out every Thursday. And if you like this, where we talk Voyager, tune into us if you haven't already. And if you haven't, what are you waiting for? We talk Voyager every single week, and we are 162 episodes in as of when we're recording this. So that is a lot of Voyager.
It's amazing.
We have, and it's so amazing. We have people who have gone back and listened to every single episode from the very beginning. We've heard this multiple times now. I cannot believe that level of dedication. I mean, I would get sick of hearing myself.
People do that with podcasts, though. I mean, I do that. Like right now, I'm listening to this Atari 2600 game by game podcast, and they've got like 130 or 40 episodes, I think. And yeah, I just went back to the beginning, and I'm just listening like one after the other, just going through. So.
Wow, it amazes me, people who are doing that. Something that I have done, and they're enjoying it. But I can't thank them enough. That's just such great, gratifying feedback. But you can also hit me up on Twitter. My handle is OhTheProfanity. Yes, it does contain profanity. It's, you know, not for the faint of heart. And it's not for everybody. But if you love me, you will love my Twitter. And come chat with me. That would be fun. So if you don't want to hit me up there, I'm more active on Twitter than I am on Facebook. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Speaking of which, if you want to find me on Twitter, my username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's also my name on Facebook and pretty much everywhere. You can find me in the Babel Conference on Facebook. And elsewhere on the network, you can find me doing Hyperchannel, which is our short news show. I've cut it back to 2 days a week now instead of five because of my work schedule, but I'm still doing that. And then you can find me on The Orb with Matthew Rushing, which is all about Deep Space Nine. And you can also find my writing about Star Trek over on the official website at StarTrek.com. If you want to read what I have to say instead of listening to me, you can find those there if you search for my name. And Char, one other thing that I forgot to mention about this episode that I just wanted to throw in.
Go
I talked
for
about
it.
The Seinfeld connections. There is also a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy connection in here, because apparently when you're going to beam over to a Cotty ship, you always need to know where your towel is.
Which also makes me think of a South Park reference. Don't forget to bring a towel.
Yeah, which is probably an homage to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It might be. It's actually more of an inside joke for me and Tristan. We will instant message each other a lot in preparation for the show. And, you know, if we get on each other's nerves, we will playfully say, oh, you're a towel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then the other will hit back, well, you're a towel. And then we spread, you know, gifts of Tally from South Park back and forth. It's our routine. It's what we do. To completely derail your train of thought there.
Yeah. I love in this episode that the Cotty beam over and they give Janeway and Tuvok towels, and then they beam over to the other ships.
What they're for, like, we just don't know. We don't need to know. There's so many details that could be perverted in this episode.
Yes, and as if we haven't done that enough already. So
I was just going to say, I mean, we could go a lot further, but let's not say we did. We have done enough damage already.
That's right. All right, so with that, I'm going to head back down and see Seven. I want to show her an easier way to find a date. I'm going to show her the new Space Tinder app.
Ooh, okay. Well, I don't know if those are the kind of guys that she's looking for, but let's stick 30,000 gigaquads of romantic data on it, because this ready room is done.